Hi, I'm Norma Jean McLean, and when I'm not helping companies with their staffing and HR consulting needs, I'm listening to the Power Plug podcast by Fidelity Bank.
Are you a woman ready to charge up her business? You're in the right place. This is the Power Plug podcast by Fidelity Bank, where we believe in your POWER, the potential of women entrepreneurs realized, and all women with an entrepreneurial spirit. Each episode is filled with practical advice, tools, and tips to help you build your business and keep you energized. Now, for your host, Mary Foley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Power Plug podcast by Fidelity Bank. I'm your host, Mary Foley, and this is episode 11. In each episode, we talk with experts right here in the New Orleans area who share their insights, recommendations, and expertise to help you grow your business. If this is the first time listening, well, welcome. And if you've listened before, well, welcome back. Good news, there are more episodes right now at fidelitybankpower.com. You can even get all the episodes right on your phone so you can listen at any time. You just go to fidelitybankpower.com and you click on one of the apps, either the Icon app to download iTunes if you have an iPhone, or the Stitcher app to download if you have an Android phone. Then you click on the app, you create a free account, and you can start listening. And when new episodes come out, boom, they will pop up right on that app. And you don't want to miss my conversations I've already had, like with Amy Landry, who shared how working moms can find true balance, or with Emily Purvis, who shared empowering ideas to market your business. Really good practical stuff and great fun conversations. So now for today's guest. Today, we're talking with Norma Jean McLean, president of Tech Chick Staffing and Consulting. With over 10 years of staffing experience in various industries, Norma Jean specializes in matching up the best IT professionals with the best IT employers, which isn't an easy task in today's competitive talent marketplace. This also means, though, she knows how to find and keep good people to run and grow businesses, which is something we all need to know how to do as business owners. Norma Jean, welcome to the Power
Thanks
Plug
so
podcast.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here too, because here's what can be really good news for all of us. The good news can be that we are growing our business and you know things are expanding. But the other news is that with a growing business, we usually need to hire more help. And for most entrepreneurs and small business owners, hiring employees is a whole new experience. So from your experience, what's the best approach to hire the right person
for
the right job?
So it all starts with the job description. Ensuring that you have a job description that is outcome focused. So almost without exception, when I'm working with a client, the job description is based around the activities that the employee will be doing, which you certainly need to include those. But what you want to think about when you're writing that job description is what outcomes you want from this hire. For example, if you're hiring a retail salesperson, the job description might read hours from 10 to 6, assist customers in the store, update the displays, keep the store tidy, answer the phone. And those are activities certainly that any retail salesperson would do. However, if you have outcomes other than the having someone man the floor, you want to include that in your job description. So if you are anticipating that by hiring this salesperson, you're going to increase sales by 5%, your job description needs to read that way. And that job description would look different. I need a retail salesperson who is going to help increase sales by 5% through servicing the clientele, building relationships, proactively calling and emailing customers, and those types of activities. The two job descriptions that I just mentioned will drive very, very different evaluation criteria. in the first instance, where you're just looking for someone to man the floor, that background that you're looking for, the work history and the personality traits are more around someone who's very reliable and conscientious, but not necessarily ambitious or fast-paced. And the second, where you're looking for someone to drive sales, you definitely want someone who's who's more proactive. So both descriptions are very valid, but you want yours to be based on the outcome, not just the activities.
And one of the things I was thinking as you were saying that is that one of those, the first one's very more qualitative, it sounds like, you know, maybe they're more customer service oriented and conscientious, as you said, reliable. And the other one has some qualitative aspects, but also has a quantitative aspect, that 5%, for example, of sales growth. Is it best to have some of both, qualitative and quantitative?
That's an excellent point. Yes, it's always a benefit to have quantitative objectives for all of your employees. This helps them monitor themselves in terms of their performance, and then enables you to have some objective criteria when you do their performance reviews, and which is another thing that you want to incorporate in your management plan, that you're reviewing your resources on at certain intervals so that they can understand if they're successful, get feedback, and also you can determine if you've made the right hire.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense, too, because you don't want someone saying, wait a minute, you didn't hire me to do this.
That's exactly.
and they're feeling a little bit duped, probably, and you didn't even mean to. Well, let's say, though, we've done the right kind of job description and we've really defined the job well. What's the next step?
So next step is establishing your screening criteria. So your screening questions, that's going to be based on the skills that you're looking for and also on the personality type that you're looking for. So for the skills, you know, those will be straightforward questions around their background, their work history, and the experience that they have. And for personality, you'll want to include behavioral questions that will help you understand what type of coping skills they have, how they handle difficult situations, that kind of thing.
So can you just clarify real quick, give me an example of a behavioral question and how that might differ from the other kinds of questions.
Okay, sure. So a behavioral question might be, tell me about a time that you, a difficult situation you had at work and how you handled it. It could be a situation with a coworker or with a customer, but describe the situation and talk about how you resolved it.
Okay. So they got to come up with an actual story and a situation.
Absolutely.
Okay. And can people think of those like right off the cuff?
No. One thing about the behavioral questions is they're not questions that people answer frequently, and it sometimes takes them a few minutes to think back and come up with a good example. So you do want to give them some time to reflect. However, they should be able to come up with something in a few minutes. If you find someone who is struggling to come up with anything at all, that is another indicator, the fact that they can't answer the question. You have to wonder how introspective they are and how they learn from previous experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Great. All right. So that's helpful. So we've got the screening process, the questions ready to go. Now, how do we find someone to talk to and ask those questions?
Okay, another challenging piece. So you want to start off with, to minimize risk, with as known a commodity as you can find. And so starting off with posting your position on your Facebook page, on your LinkedIn, and reaching out to your network for referrals. Once you've exhausted that, if you're not able to find a candidate through those methods, job posting on the job boards is always an option. It is, you kind of have some mixed success there. What you'll find is once you post a job, you will get a ton of applicants, and 99% of them won't be qualified. So you'll find you have to go through a lot of resumes to find a couple that might be qualified. So as much as you can, you know, reaching out to your network is the best place to start. And then going to the job postings, like, it's a little painful, but hopefully you'll find someone eventually through that process.
Yeah. Now, is it where with such a tight talent and job market right now, is it really like crossing your fingers just to find one good person? Or would you say, well, you might have two or three?
Finding one person is the challenge right now. And unemployment is very low. It's definitely a candidate's market. Just another point to bring up around that, when you are interviewing, you know, do remember that it is a candidate's market out there, and the interview process goes both ways. So you want to make sure you're selling your job to that candidate. I always recommend that you interview 2 to 3 candidates at a minimum, not a whole lot more than that, but definitely don't just go for one, because you want someone to compare them to. But finding more than one good candidate right now can be a challenge. If you end up lucky enough where you have more than one great candidate, you might want to consider the ability to hire both of them if you feel like you're going to need another resource in the near future.
Mm-hmm. I had a situation actually with one of the gals that I've been coaching, and she had that same thing where she was looking for one part-time person, and then she had these two great, you know, people, and she goes, I think I'm going to hire them both. And she did, and it has worked out fabulous. However, I was like, wow. I thought of it in terms of that's a whole lot of people to bring on at once and incorporate in and everything. And I think she saw it in the same way you did, which is get them while they're getting good.
Absolutely. And I have a client who's doing the same. I had two excellent candidates interview last week, and they're both rock stars, and they're looking for budget approval to hire both of them. So if there's good talent out there and you feel you're going to need it in the near future, definitely grab it while you can.
Okay. I'm thinking, as you're going through this whole description of hiring an employee part-time, full-time, but this whole process could also apply to hiring contractors. Am I right?
Absolutely. Typically, use an abridged interview process for hiring contractors. However, doing some form of a behavioral interview with contractors, I highly recommend. I don't feel like you have to go through the exhaustive interview process that you do for a full-time employee, but you do still want to get a sense of their personality, of the way that they interact with others, so that you know or can minimize the risk of running into personality issues while they are on contract.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that we can use this process for both, because we may be hiring, obviously, different, sometimes contractors, sometimes employees, but we can have one overall process that we go through, which makes it easier and makes more sense. Norma Jean, you've already made us a whole lot smarter as business owners and entrepreneurs. We need to take a quick break. So let's press pause. And when we come back, I've got some more questions for you. So hold on. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Liz Brockman, in charge of power at Fidelity Bank. As a woman in business, you know that it all comes down to great relationships with your customers, employees, suppliers, and your bank. That's why we're excited about our new power program. We have designed to meet not only your financial needs to grow your business, but also your non-financial ones, like practical know-how, savvy connections, and trustworthy resources. Whether it's our online Power Member Directory, member-only Facebook group, sponsored events, or more, we are your community partner to help your business succeed and flourish. At Fidelity, we're here for powerful business. When women in business succeed, we all do. To find out more, Go to fidelitybankpower.com. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome back. This is Mary Foley, and today we're talking with Norma Jean McLean, president of Tech Chicks Staffing and Consulting. Now, Norma Jean, from my personal experience, hiring and bringing someone new into the business is way more enjoyable than having to fire someone. But it does happen, and it's my business, so I want to take care of it. From your experience, what are the signs that an employee is just not working out and no longer a fit?
So going back to having set up objective measures from the beginning will help you assess that, and setting up review intervals at least 30 days. I would do it every 30 days for the first 90 to do a sanity check for yourself that they are working out as well as you think they are. Other indicators that an employee might not be happy or might be disengaged, if they're starting to show up late for work, they are wanting to leave early frequently, if they are asking for a lot of time off. Other indicators to pay attention to are your other employees. Do you notice that your other employees are acting differently or not gelling with the new employee? Because there could be some things going on that you're not aware of and how that new employee is interacting with your employees. And oftentimes, the other employees won't tell you because they don't feel comfortable doing that. Between, you know, their attendance and doing the reviews, paying attention to how the other employees are interacting with them, I mean, those are really, really good indicators.
Yeah, that does sound good. Do you think also, do you see a lot where clients or customers are complaining and that it's directed towards the new person?
Absolutely. And if that's occurring, then, you know, that it's definitely a problem. That's not something to dismiss.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to say a little, just go a little bit further with that. When you are getting those indicators, so many small business owners I know, nobody wants to fire people. And most people are non-confrontational. So I've often seen where business owners or hiring managers won't fire someone because they want to give them a chance, or they want to give them the benefit of the doubt, or they just don't want to see someone lose their job. And I've seen bad employees linger for much longer than they should for those reasons. Because the business owner is a nice person, they don't want to fire them.
And it is uncomfortable. It's I always say if it gets too comfortable firing people, you should probably stop hiring them and managing in the first place, because maybe now you just don't care at all what the people feel, you know. So it's not comfortable. But it always seems to be a sense of relief. Again, when not just because you fired them, but like, you know, it's not a fit. There's a problem. And I always sometimes imagine, OK, if this person was no longer coming in the next day, would I have a big exhale? If so, that's an indication for myself and probably others who are also on the team, I need to take that action. And they can't fire them, but I can, because I'm the business owner.
Exactly. And by letting a bad employee linger, you jeopardize the morale of your whole team. Are definitely losing opportunity for your business to grow, because if they're not a good employee, they're probably not productive. And if they're a productive employee, but who's causing a morale issue, they're hurting the overall productivity. And so when making that decision, you really have to kind of take the humanity aspect of it out and just look at it as at your business. And is this a good thing for my business? And if it isn't, making that hard decision and taking that hard action is really critical to your success.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to emphasize that, as hard as it is to do, but to do it sooner than later.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. It's one of those ones that we kind of know, but we don't always want to do. And having an extra little push from someone like yourself to say, just do it. You have to do it sooner than later. What though? Okay, so let's say we know we need to let somebody go. How do I go about firing someone in a way that's respectful as well as legally smart?
Okay. So from a management perspective, as a manager, you really shouldn't have anyone that you've got to terminate that doesn't see it coming. So as a manager, you want to make sure that you're giving feedback where they need to improve, that you're documenting it, and that if it's a performance issue, if it's a breach of policy, it's really important that you have a handbook that describes all your policies and that each employee is signed. And you want to have that, if not created by an HR professional, reviewed by an HR professional and your attorney. And that's really important to have those policies documented so that if you have to terminate someone for breaking a policy, you have that's caused because they have been notified of the policy. So in terms of terminating someone in a respectful manner, by having warned them prior to the termination, I think that's important for, you know, the legal reasons and for, you know, out of respect to that employee. If they don't know they're doing something wrong, then they can't, you know, fairly be expected to change. So then when you do have to give them the news, if you can have an HR professional present, that's best. If not, have another employee present. Two, you want to let them know what the cause is, what the reason is, but then you don't need to get into an explanation or a long conversation. Jane Doe, you are terminated effective today for performance as discussed in our previous three reviews. You will receive your last check on X date. Thank you. And then end it. You don't owe them any more than that. And once you start getting into a long discussion, you know, things can get emotional. You might say something that you shouldn't say. They might say something they shouldn't say, but just giving them the short and sweet and then walking them out of the building is definitely the best way to go. And if they call you later and want to talk about it, do not engage in it because it doesn't end up good ever.
Wow. Yeah, that whole thing, though, then walking down the hall to their office or to their cubicle or to their desk and pick up their belongings and walking out, it kind of makes me feel like, oh, you know, what are they, criminals? Of course, they're necessarily not. But what you're trying to do is you don't want them saying things to other people, right? You don't want them trying to stir other things up and causing a problem that puts you at legal risk. And that's really why you have to do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's never pleasant. And when you're doing it, you're never going to get used to it or ever going to enjoy it, or at least most people don't. But it is necessary and it is the right way to handle it. Walking up to their desk, letting them get their things. They don't feel good about it at the time either. But as a business owner, you have to protect your business and your other employees. And that's the best way to do it.
Best way to do it. Now, let's say, since they likely know that they have a performance issue or maybe they broke a policy, they've gotten feedback on it, and they decide they're going to quit first. What happens then at that point? What do I need to know as an employer that now I'm responsible for?
Well, congratulations, because now you don't have to fire them. And also, you aren't responsible for any unemployment claim if they quit. So even when you terminate someone, you're not necessarily responsible for unemployment claims if they're terminated for cause. And that's why having that handbook established that is signed by every employee, having the documented reviews is so important if an unemployment claim gets filed. Now, if you do terminate someone, and it's not fun for this reason either, it's not for cause, but for some reason, maybe you have to downsize, or maybe a position has just been eliminated because it's been replaced through automation. If an employee is terminated for no cause, in other words, nothing they did in terms of breaking a policy, or if their performance was up to par, well, that's what unemployment's for. Those kind of unemployment claims are legitimate, and you are responsible for. But again, if you're not documenting the cause before the termination, then sometimes the unemployment claims by people that you have rightfully terminated, you may be responsible for that claim.
Norma Jean, we only have a few minutes left. I want to switch gears before time's up and ask you, was there a moment or an event in your own history that inspired you to do what you're doing now?
Absolutely. It was kind of like a Jerry Maguire moment. A few years ago, I was working for an IT staffing company, and the staffing industry has just become very commoditized, and meaning that it's turned into more of a numbers driven industry rather than a personal touch industry. And what I found, I just wasn't thrilled with how we were handling our clients and our candidates in terms of understanding what they were looking for, what the best long-term solution for both the candidate and the client were. So I just said one day, this isn't the way that I want to do this. I want to go back more to personal touch and understanding career paths and helping people achieve their career goals and giving my clients people who stuck for the long haul. So that's really what we're focused on, and we've already had tremendous success. I do feel like it's just doing the right thing, and that ends up, you know, everyone ends up rewarded.
I think that's great. That's a great story, you know, and you really saw a need of having some of that high touch. That was just because it was missing, and you had experienced it before. It made me think of you're putting the high touch back into the high tech. Okay, good. You can use that. Go ahead and use that because it's true. It's a high touch to a high tech industry. And I know that there are, women business owners and entrepreneurs listening right now. They may not necessarily have IT needs, but you also do some consulting around all kinds of HR type of needs. So I'm wondering, for those who want to get in touch with you and maybe have a personal conversation, what's the best way they can do that?
They can email me. My email is Norma Jean, NORMAJEAN, @ thetechchicks.com, and that's thetechchicks.com. And I'd love to have conversation and provide any assistance I can.
Excellent. So now, do people contact you as well through your cell phone? Is that one that you also?
Absolutely. And that's 504-813-2799.
Great. Thank you. Because some people, you know, they like to just text. And we understand that too. I get it.
Absolutely.
This has been great. Thank you so much, Norma Jean, for your time, for your expertise. And I know that you need to be helping a client right now find the next new candidate for their job. So we'll wrap up for today. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All of us have powerful people in our lives, just like the one on today's Power Plug podcast. Our Power program is unlike any other in our region. At Fidelity, we're bringing amazing women together to be part of something special. We not only have banking and financial options with women entrepreneurs in mind, we also provide opportunities for you to make valuable connections and to promote your business. At Fidelity, we're here for powerful business. When women in business succeed, we all do. To find out more, go to fidelitybankpower.com. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
Whew, wow, that was fast. But we hope you are feeling re-energized to power up your business and go after your dreams. Make sure you stay recharged. Subscribe to the Power Plug Podcast at fidelitybankpower.com so you can get the latest episode as soon as it comes out. Until next time, keep believing in the power of you, just like we do.